Hello and welcome to the Motivation for Regular People podcast. People tend to think about motivation as something that some people have and others don't. The truth is that we all have the same amount of motivation because motivation plays a role in every decision that we make and every action we take. This means that you already have all the motivation you need to accomplish your goals. The only thing standing in your way is a deeper awareness of how motivation actually works and what truly motivates you. I hope this podcast helps you discover and utilize the motivation you've always had inside you. Now, let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Motivation for Regular People podcast. I'm really excited about today's show. I don't often talk about downloads or ratings because there's not really a reason to bring it up, but I couldn't help but notice that our numbers for last week's episode were the highest they've been since the introduction to this series, which hopefully means that you are benefiting from listening to this series as much as I'm benefiting from writing and recording it. So here's where we are today. We're continuing our It's Up to You series. We've been talking about the things in life that we can and can't control and how we can best approach each one. The hope is eventually to take this content and turn it into a book, ideally by the end of the year. By the way, although we're in the middle of a multi-part series, each episode can stand alone on its own. So if this is your first time to tune into the show, although I definitely encourage you to go back and listen to all of the other episodes in the series, don't feel like you have to be totally caught up in order to benefit from today's episode. It can function on its own, even if you haven't heard any of the episodes prior. Last week, we talked about our inability to control timing. And it's funny, when we talk about timing, especially in that context, we're mostly thinking about present and future events that could happen, although they haven't happened yet. This week, we're sort of taking the opposite approach. We're talking about how we can't control the past. And this one matters because although we may talk about living with no regrets, and we might joke about the guy with the misspelled no regrets tattoo on his chest, go ahead and Google that one if you don't know what I'm talking about. This isn't actually the attitude that most of us have in our lives. I've got a question to get us started. If I told you that you could go back and eliminate one event from your past, what event would you choose? While you think about it, I'm going to share one of the first events that came to my mind from my life. By the way, I am intentionally keeping this lighthearted, although I know that some of you are probably thinking about more consequential or detrimental events than what I'm about to share. So 11 years ago, I feel old saying that, I was working as a summer youth ministry intern in San Antonio, Texas. Shout out to Cody Spear in the MacArthur Park Church of Christ. I had a great experience there. It was my second summer, and by that point, I had pretty solid relationships with most of the students. So we were in the middle of a week-long work camp. We would paint houses during the day, and then in the afternoon, we would go to a swimming hole on the north side of town to cool off. I call it a swimming hole because I'm not really sure what else to call it. It wasn't a pool, but it wasn't really a pond or a lake either. It was definitely man-made. Anyways, so at this swimming hole, they had a zip line that we would all wait our turn to go down. Another detail that's relevant for this story, at the time, we were all very much into this game called What Are the Odds? The premise of this game was that you could dare someone to do something outrageous by phrasing it in the form of a question and making the other person guess a number. You may not get it yet, but it'll make more sense as I continue this story. We're in line for the zip line, and one of my students says, "Hey Brady, what are the odds that you'll jump off the platform instead of riding the zip line?" At this point, I have to choose a range. If I'm more willing to do it, the range will be smaller. It could be 1 to 10 or 1 to 20. If it's something more outrageous or ridiculous, the range will be wider, maybe 1 in 1,000. The reason is because after I say a range, we'll both count to 3 and say a number somewhere in that range. And if we say the same number, I have to do the task. Anyways, I don't think my range was incredibly high, and we both guessed the same number. So I get to the front of the line, the employee working the zip line gives me the handle and says I'm good to go, and my stupid 19-year-old self gives the handle back and cannonballs off the platform. What happened next was still, to this day, the worst pain that I've ever felt in my life. Immediately when I hit the water, I knew something wasn't right. It felt like there was water flooding into my ear. Then I got out of the water and I couldn't walk straight. It felt like someone was stabbing a pencil into my ear. Needless to say, that was my last time in the water that week and my last time to ever jump off that platform or even ride that zip line. So the pain got worse as the day went on, and before the day was over, I was visiting urgent care, filling my first prescription on my own. Remember, I was only 19 years old at the time. I was completely miserable. Thankfully, the pain was short-lived, and I was feeling much more like myself within a day or two. I should also mention that this happened 3 days before my 20th birthday, but didn't impact the festivities at all. So I tell this story for two reasons. First of all, there's value in poking fun at yourself every once in a while, and I have no shortage of good material with which to do so. Secondly, and more importantly for the purposes of this episode, no matter how badly we might want to, we cannot change the past. Once my feet left that platform and I was headed toward the surface of the water, there was nothing I could do to take back the decision to jump or eliminate the consequences waiting for me at the bottom of the jump. Perhaps more importantly, I can't hit reset on decisions that I've made that have otherwise stunted my development, held me back from my potential or various opportunities, and the decisions that have hurt people closest to me. And neither can you. Life isn't a video game where you can save the game at a critical moment to give yourself a chance to go back and redo the scenario if it doesn't work out or play out in the way that you want it to. By the way, if you never thought about using that little tactic to beat a video game, feel free to give it a try. I honestly wouldn't have beat The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time if not for that little workaround. Anyways, when it comes to real life, we can't change the past, but do you know what we can control? The way that we think about the past. Let me say that one more time so you don't miss it. We can't control the past, but we can control the way that we think about the past. It's funny, I honestly didn't know this was going to be the focus of this podcast episode until about 4 days ago. I just finished listening to my first Mark Manson book. If you don't know who Mark Manson is, he is a popular self-help author with a successful email newsletter and 3 New York Times bestsellers. I'm not going to mention the name of the specific Mark Manson book that I was reading because there is some colorful language in the title, and I sometimes have young nieces and nephews who will listen to the show. Just know that the book that I'm talking about starts with the subtle art, that's the language, the subtle art, and it ends with a 4-letter word that I can't mention on the show without adding an explicit tag, and I'm not really interested in doing that. That said, if some adult language and some PG-13 concepts don't deter you, there's a lot of valuable information and concepts in this book. Specifically in the last chapter, Mark Manson shares some research from an American author and psychologist named Ernest Becker, who wrote and spoke about the idea that human beings are the only life forms that can conceptualize a world without them in it. A lot of this came from his 1973 book, The Denial of Death. That's Ernest Becker's book and not Mark Manson, by the way. When Mark talks about this book and this idea, he jokes that other life forms, such as dogs, don't sit around and wonder what the world would be like if they didn't exist. They just simply live until it comes time for them to die. And as I thought about this idea, I began to wonder if we could apply this same principle to the way that we think about the past. What if human beings are the only animals that sit around and think about the past and what they wish they would have done differently or better? I have a yellow Labrador Retriever mix who's almost 8 years old now. We've had her pretty much her entire life, and I would hazard a guess that she doesn't ever sit around and think about if she barked loudly enough at our neighbors or if she should have gone to her water bowl first in the morning instead of her food bowl. She simply lives each day, sleeps 16 to 18 hours on my couch, and then the next morning wakes up and does it all over again. Now, obviously, we think about our own situations differently because from our perspective, the stakes are higher and we have a deeper level of emotional and psychological awareness. However, the point still needs to be made that we are unique in the way that we think about the past, and this ability to conceptualize both what actually happened and what could have happened instead can either help us or hurt us. We've established that we can't control the past, but we can control how we think about the past. Now the question becomes, how do we make sure that this is an asset and not a detriment? Let me give you four principles that will help you think about the past in the most positive and constructive way. First thing that we need to do, we need to evaluate our intent as well as the eventual outcome. There are many times in life where our actions and our intentions don't correlate with the outcome that we ultimately experience. We can do everything right or to the best of our abilities, but because of reasons outside our control, things don't work out the way that we had planned or hoped. When this happens, there's both a right way and a wrong way to think about it. More specifically, there are two extremes that we can fall victim to. On one side of the spectrum, you'll find the person who assumes that their actions and intentions were completely wrong because the outcome didn't match their effort. If you struggle with this type of mentality, you need to offer yourself grace. Take some wisdom from this series and remember that there are many factors of life outside of your control, and you don't have to be at fault even if your expectations weren't met. However, this doesn't mean that you can't learn something valuable from the situation that impacts the way that you approach a similar event in the future. It's like the old saying goes, if you fool me once, shame on you. If you fool me twice, shame on me. You can offer yourself grace based on your intentions, but you should still look for opportunities to refine and enhance your approach based on whatever outcome results. So first, we're going to evaluate our intent as well as the eventual outcome. Secondly, we're going to acknowledge that our memories are not infallible. Did you ever play the game telephone as a kid? One person gives a message to another person who shares the same message with the person next to them, and that process continues to repeat until the message works its way all the way down the line and through several people. By the time you get to the end, the message that has been passed down can be quite different from what the message was originally. Although we don't often think about our memories this way, they often function in a similar manner. We have the initial experience, and then we reflect on the initial experience a few minutes or hours later, and then we do the same thing the following day, and so on and so forth. It's possible that each time that memory changes just a little bit, emphasizing different components while eliminating others. Eventually, you may reach a point where the way that you remember an experience can be quite different from what experience actually played out in reality. And you have no way to know because all you have in your mind is your current perception of the event and not the original reality. You might wonder why this is the case, and I can tell you, it's pretty simple. As human beings, we are hardly ever logical or rational. Instead, we are all reactive, emotional beings, even at our best. And this isn't an indictment on anybody. This is simply a survival mechanism. Here's something else to think about. When our brains are missing details, they fill in the gaps based on our previous experiences or prior knowledge. And by the way, when knowledge is lacking, assumptions can quickly take its place. So we can't fully trust our memories because they are not 100% accurate or infallible. Instead, we need to approach our memories with a degree of skepticism and awareness that the way we remember something may not actually be the way that it played out, while keeping an open mind to the idea that we don't know as much as we might think that we know. So, assuming our memories are infallible, also evaluating our intent as well as the eventual outcome, next we're going to assume that we only know one side of the story. It's amazing how limited our perceptions are. As we talked about just now, we understand and interpret events based on how we see them and over time how we remember them, but we often fail to recognize that our view is just one of many possible viewpoints. Obviously, this doesn't apply in all situations, but it does apply in many situations. It's also not meant to be a justification for poor moral decisions or obvious lapses in judgment. Sometimes something is universally wrong across the board, especially if it's an action that somehow harms other people or promotes some sort of concept or understanding that is damaging for yourself or for many people. But I think this idea that we only know one side of the story is important to mention, because so often we will go through a situation, we will look back, we'll feel guilty or awkward about something that we said, and so we will either ruminate on that memory in our own mind, or we will go back and try to address the situation or cover our tracks with someone else, and then we'll quickly realize that that event that was such a big deal in our mind is something that the other person never gave a second thought to. Remember, our memories aren't infallible. We can blow a situation out of proportion just by ruminating on it in our own head and making it out to be something that it never actually was. Not only does this not help anybody, ourselves included, but it can lead us down this path of making things out in our minds to be more than what they are in reality, and then we become a prisoner of our own thoughts. So, assume that you only know one side of the story. Be open to outside perspectives or opinions, or even just that awareness that you don't know everything about what is going on. Finally, and I'll tell you, I think this is the most important one, we need to recognize that success is always the byproduct of previous failure. Oftentimes, successful people only get where they are because of failures that they've experienced in the past. This was actually another idea that I took from Mark Manson's book. He writes that successful people are often successful because they have already failed more often than we have. And this idea highlights this principle that the only way to get to the place that we want to go is to fail more times than we already have. I can't help but think about Thomas Edison, who famously invented the light bulb, which I'm using right now. I imagine you use it every day, constantly every day. And as you may know, Thomas Edison didn't nail the light bulb on his first or second try. It took him more than 1,000 prototypes before he finally made a working model. However, Thomas Edison would be quick to tell you that his first 999 attempts, or however many attempts it actually ended up being, were not failures. He would say, "I didn't fail at making a light bulb. I just learned another way to not make a light bulb." So the question remains, what does this have to do with the way that we look at the past? Well, when we can frame the past as a stepping stone to the future, we're more concerned with how our past slip-ups and regrets and failures help us get to a point of success, either today or in the future, and less concerned with any momentary pain or discomfort that may result. And what's cool about this principle is it informs not just how we think about the past, because of how it makes us feel in the present, but it also helps us think about the past in a way that pushes us toward a better future. If we can interpret our past failures and our past shortcomings as something that is leading us down a path to a better tomorrow, then we are able to leverage that past rather than allowing the past to be something that mentally consumes us or distracts us from what is going on in the present. And that's the thought that I want to leave you with. The way that we look at the past is so important because of how it impacts where we're going. It's not just about coming to peace or coming to terms with what we can't control in our prior life, although that does matter. It's more about looking at the past in a way that is healthy and that supports our ongoing growth and development so that we can leverage our past experiences in a way that improves the quality of both our present and our future. Hey, thanks again for listening to the podcast. As a reminder, we have new episodes come out every Thursday. Haven't done a lot of bonus episodes recently because we've been focusing on the solo content. Hopefully, we'll get back to doing some of those as well as some interview-style podcasts in the future, but I'm really enjoying working my way through this series, and hopefully you are benefiting from the content as well. Anyways, I'll see you next week. Remember, you already have all the motivation you need to accomplish your goals, and it's up to you to decide what you'll do with it. Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. Recently, I was feeling overwhelmed with all of the responsibilities I was juggling in my work and personal life. I signed up for BetterHelp and scheduled my first online therapy session. To be honest, I was a little nervous about meeting with a therapist online, but I was matched with a great therapist who offered me a fantastic experience. She helped me tremendously in our first session, and I noticed an instant difference in my mental health. BetterHelp is the world's largest therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 30,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy. That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. then you can talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable, whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call. You can also message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions whenever it's convenient for you. If you're matched with a therapist who isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional charge. With BetterHelp, you get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom-picked for you, you also get more scheduling flexibility and a more affordable price, especially when you get 10% off your first month by signing up at betterhelp.com/MFRP. That's betterhelp.com/MFRP. Check it out and sign up today.